It is Thursday, the 2nd of July, 2015, and this is episode 251 of Digital Outbox. Hello, you're listening to Digital Outbox. I am Chris, hosting today, as ever, joined by Ian. Hello, Ian. Another week. In fact, it's not another week. It's only a few days since we did the last one, isn't it?
Evening, Chris. I have just been told to stand up because it's 10 to 7.
10 to 7?
10 to the hour if you've not done your 12 hours of standing. Apple Watch tells you to stand.
I see. It instructs you to stand. You must do the...
I'm like a total sheep. I said I would switch that off, but then I wanted to complete my circle, so I have kept it on. But
it's all about completing the circles.
It is. And the thing was really funny. So it was like, you know, Wednesday morning, I've got a doing some crap meeting at work, high workers. And there was, I spent the whole 2 hours on my feet, and it still told me to stand, even when I was standing. Because all it's doing is measuring movement, not standing. So it's assuming that most of the time when you're not moving, you are sitting down.
You're
so stand to move.
Yes, because it doesn't have an altitude sensor.
No crazy person's going to stand like within 2 feet of where they're standing for 2 hours.
So, okay, go on. You've had the watch now for 3 weeks, 4 weeks? Is it a month?
2 months.
Is it 2 months now already? Okay, go on. What's your 2 monthly review like? Is it now, because it must be sunk into the kind of everyday ongoing thing now.
It just feels kind of normal. And it just feels like a watch that tells time and gives me a bit more information, like weather. And I like my little stats about my health. And some of the apps are handy, like Todoist is nice. And Dark Skies is nice. The rest are pretty average. And
so you're still waiting for this new update to come out so that you can actually get the proper...
I was super excited that this week there's a bug fix which stops. There's a setting that says don't install apps. You control it. You can either say and see if an app comes out. So just say, I don't know, Kindle comes out with a watch app. You can say install it automatically. And I don't want that. I want to pick and choose.
Yep.
But there was a bug. So everything kept on going into the watch. And I was like, I don't want all these apps and I don't want all these...
So these are all the addition add-on apps kind of
glances.
Thing,
yeah. Every time you go into my glances, instead of having like 4, I would have like 20. And I was like, I don't want all this.
Oh, so you can't glance, it's a read.
Yeah. So that got fixed this week. Generally, it's been fine. Battery life is spot on. And I've had no real big problems with it, but there's no real big, you know, super...
There's no buzz around it either. So it's kind of just, it's just an ongoing thing now. I guess until those apps come, native apps come, then it's going to be pretty standard.
And I've got a smarter, more intelligent watch, but its battery life runs all day. And I was wearing a watch anyway. And
mine runs for probably 12 years. That's pretty good what battery life.
Yeah, but you can't see if it's raining.
Got a window. Yeah, my aunt's actually picked one up and she's very happy with it as well.
As I said, it's and you get people asking at work and it's like I couldn't say you must go and buy it, but equally I've got no reason why somebody shouldn't if they're interested.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Impromptu 2 month review. Let's go on with the news. Google is being slated, I guess, by some people who reckon they've got, you know, evidence that they manipulate their results to screw their rivals, basically. So this is Yelp, Legal Star. Hang on. Yelp and Tim Wu, who have come along and said, no, we've got evidence to suggest that you are actually manipulating results. Now, I've read this news article, and I have to say, they're very excited about this evidence they've got. It all sounds a bit flaky to me. I don't know what you think. There's boxes missing here. We reckon that it's showing an alteration of orders and things like that. But I didn't really get it, to be honest. I don't know if you did.
I mean, basically, I think the biggest thing for me was this guy, Tim Wu, seemingly 2 years ago said there is no evidence at all that Google's manipulating results. And he's changed his tune. I think that seemed to be the biggest angle on it. And Yelp are saying that this is definitely, you know, evidence that the way we have felt that in the past that we have been adversely affected. And as you say, it was all about, they've got a browser plugin that is trying to recreate Google's organic results. then it's all about what happens in their win box at the side and whether they should be there and what should be there, and certain times that Yelp should be there based on what they've got and they feel.
And they're saying
around.
Their user testing shows that whoever installs this Yelp app, so Yelp customers, they reckon they get clicked on 45% more than they do when they're inside of normal Google apps. But like, this is where I was like, I don't really get what this Yelp app is, and surely only Yelp customers are going to install this Yelp app. And therefore, surely, yeah, they're definitely going to click on it more often, because they're not the broad demographic that everyone is. They're no. You know, the people that happen to use Yelp.
And in a pretty kind of academia type fashion, his kind of closing comment was, instead, in the largest category of search, local intent based, Google appears to be strategically deploying universal search in a way that degrades the product so as to slow and exclude challengers to its dominant search paradigm.
And this is kind of, again, lots of things led up to that statement, you know, all these, this is how it's happening. And I guess he's saying that local search is, we should be there more often because we give relevant information, and Google are not putting us in that one box. They're not including us in those results. So it just felt a little bit, I didn't really get the whole thing. Didn't feel as dramatic as they're making it sound out.
As I said, the biggest thing for me was that a fairly well-known, you know, allegedly independent academic on this had changed course and said, actually, all these years I've been defending them, actually, I think they are doing something. Okay. And I think that was the biggest, but when you look at it in detail for me, and I guess we're not Luddites, but, you know, we're obviously not an academic in this area. Mm-hmm. It just felt a bit woolly, and it felt a bit like, wah. And also, things do change. You know, if you look at all, what is it, the Panda updates and stuff that they do every so often to change their search algorithms and try to make the kind of spammy pages, you know, less prone to.
They've definitely done a good job on doing that.
Yeah, if you think
back to InfoSeek days and when Google first started out, and the amount of junk that you got in search results, you had to plow through 4 pages of junk before you got to real results.
But then 4, 5, 6 years ago, there always was the kind of, I was always confident I could put in a combination of words and first page I would get a decent answer. And last year I felt that had gone, and this year I feel it's back. Last year I feel that I'm searching, I can find things really quickly again. And whether that's just constant or whether it's just, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's my.
Yeah, you often used to get those, though, the sites deliberately set up just to have effectively duplicate content from the main source place, put it all, and they're still around. But nowadays you tend to get better results. It does tend to be better. You're right.
The bit I was surprised at was Google declined to comment on the story. I thought it's a fairly big story. It was covered in lots of the tech areas, and they just were like, no comment.
Just don't want to fan the flames until, I guess, maybe. If it does go to court and it does, you know, and like you say, it is interesting that someone who has obviously got intelligence in this area and who's worked in it before has changed their mind. But I think it could be just a storm in a teacup. I'm not sure they could convince a judge that, you know, that at that level.
And at the same time, Apple are famous for just declining to comment. But yes. Loads of bugs and issues, decline to comment.
We'll wait until we really do need to comment. Thanks very much. Google also apologised this week for the Photos app. It mistakenly labelled a black couple as gorillas. They've said how devastated they are and how serious they take this, and that they're making amends. And I guess we'll see whether they can get this software, you know, more sensitive to the correctly identifying.
Yes, we mentioned this.
Yeah,
I don't know, weeks ago, and I think it was Flickr. And their auto-tagging had started
tagging. Yeah, it's exactly the same story, but for another company. Yeah.
Yes, and I think it's just one of these things that, you know, and to be fair, Google in this instance did apologise really quickly, and were all over it really quickly, because this was one that was like, that's horrific. You know, it just... Yeah. I mean, the Google executive, which I'm not going to pronounce, he basically said straight away, this was one of the bugs that you never want to see happen. You know, you just do not want it to appear. And that they're saying they're all over it to try and make sure there's fixes around it, and that we get better at this. And it's a challenging problem. You know, if you look at the algorithms and how they work these things out, it's not...
They're clever, but they're algorithms at the end of the day, and they're subject to failures. So, you know, unfortunately, you're also subject to human instinct and nature. So, it's, you know, if it... mistakes a rocking horse for a real horse, it doesn't make any difference in this case. You know, people do get offended by it because it's pretty horrific from a if you're not taking it from an algorithm point of view, you take it from a human point of view, it's just totally wrong.
Especially the whole, you know, if you and your partner or you and your family and something was tagged automatically, you know, and it was quite insensitive, you'd be rightly quite outraged, especially just the way that was done. It was like that.
Especially
horrible.
If you didn't ask it to be tagged. That's the other thing. These automated processes, people don't necessarily ask for it all to happen, and it happens automated, and then you get insulted. So it's actually the company that's insulted you, not their inefficient algorithm.
And that was always my biggest issue with Flickr auto tagging. It's like, don't I want to tag it my way. It's a bit like when mm-hmm. people start messing with my music. I've tagged it a certain way because for reasons. Stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
Safari. There was a blogger out who he's quite a prevalent blogger. He attended, is it EdgeConf? So are they talking about sort of the edge of the net, where the net's going to head?
I guess it's all about advanced web technologies, I guess. Okay. It's the best way of
and basically, the reason this story's in our show notes is because he's kind of saying Safari's becoming the new Internet Explorer, that browser that everyone has to support but hates because it's not compliant or it's not in advancing. It's true, that's how Internet Explorer is viewed. Recently, Internet Explorer has become totally standards compliant, and the latest incarnations are even well received, really. But Safari seems to be lagging somewhat, and the story coming out of that he's kind of leading on is they're stagnating in their support of HTML5 in particular, which is making deployment much harder. You know, they branched off from WebKit, didn't they? They used to they moaned that they were trying to drive on WebKit's development, and they were being held back by Google and a number of other people. Then they branched off, and now it seems like they've kind of lost their focus on that, or they don't want to put that focus onto the Safari. That they're now, well, you know, they're working on their operating system again now.
Yes, and I mean, I guess we spoke, you know, briefly before the start of the podcast about this. I mean, Apple. If you go back and the blogger, you know, makes really good reference to Apple were you know, visionaries in this. You know, let's ditch Flash. You know, it was all around battery life. Let's move to HTML5. That's the, you know, future of web. But then, you know, and that was 2010. You know, you think it's recent, and I guess it is still recent, but it's half a decade. You know, it's quite a distance ago.
Internet terms, that's ages.
Exactly, and as you said, they've kind of abandoned, you know, their kind of whole update of WebKit. And there's a number of different technologies which are covered here about, you know, which they don't support, or they're really slow at fixing bugs on compared to, you know, Chrome and Firefox, and now IE, who are really starting to get all over it. And I do think there's kind of merit to this, you know, if I put it that way.
Yeah, definitely.
Apple are certainly app focused, and if you look at the latest iOS release, it says that, you know, let's go for this news format and put all your web articles into this separate news format in this news application. And that seems to be the kind of route they're going down, which is
it is not in Apple's interest to have HTML5 take over from native apps. It's not. And whilst that is in the interests of most other people, so Google went specifically down that route for things like their, you know, operating system. Chrome operating system, Chrome, whatever you call it.
Chrome OS,
there you go. So that's the exact direction they went in. And in fact, many other people are now coming up with these kind of web, you know, pretty advanced web apps. I think I keep mentioning this as often as I can. We said that, I said that was the direction ages ago. And it seems maybe like we are, that they've noticed we're on this tipping point, and maybe they don't, you know, it's not in their best interest to keep their browser being able to do it, because it's actually the app side of thing that is being held back. It's things like the sandbox models and things that Apple are, in fact, totally standards compliant on. But actually, it makes developing on a Safari browser extremely difficult. And Safari, we've just been through a massive deployment development process, and it's Safari that causes more problems now than any other browser. As far as you know, a solution will work for all other browsers, and Safari will be the problem that will not work. For whatever, you know, one reason or another, and that's exactly how Internet Explorer used to be. You had to develop a site Absolutely. And limit that site because of the browsers you had to support.
Which is a fair, I moved, certainly when Yosemite came out, I moved from Chrome to Safari, and it's been fine, but there's very little web apps I now use. I think I am probably in all that. I've got loads of, you know, apps rather than web apps. You know, I think probably the one I use most is, you know, Google Docs. I still use Google Docs all the time, obviously, for show notes.
But fundamentally, things like Todoist, things like Spotify, things like that are all built on that same kind of technology underlying, as in it's all web app type technology wrapped up in an actual app that you click on. But underlying, I think they are much more web focused than you give credit for, because it's easy to port.
No, absolutely. And I mean, Apple's not alone in this. I'm just thinking through things like Facebook. They were big, you know, proponents of, you know, we're going to be HTML5, our apps are HTML5, yeah. And it was a dog.
And in fact, that's a very good point, which I meant to raise, actually. Yeah, they said HTML5's not ready. So that's why their app, they said, was a dog. Then they went backwards to go to that. I don't know what they ended up using again in the end. But nevertheless, that didn't really solve the Facebook issues. It's still a bit of a dog.
It is.
So I don't think it was all down to HTML5. But they did say it specifically. It wasn't ready for what they wanted.
I do think there's a certain amount of truth about this post. It does feel...
Yes.
I mean, the post, if we can start building a vibrant ecosystem of web applications where Apple is not invited, then maybe they'll be forced to pull a Microsoft and make their own penitent walk to Canossa. Otherwise, we'll have to content ourselves with living the web of 2010 with Safari replacing the IE's blue-tinged icon that fills web developers with dread. And that's a horrible position to be in, especially for a company like Apple. I mean, their engineers, there's no doubt they've got fantastic engineering talent, but they're focused on Swift, they're focused on iOS, they're focused on APIs, they're focused on things like, you know, Watch. And you can see that, actually, yeah, there's just a few add-ons for Safari that you get every sort, like, you know, pin tabs.
Like I said, the browser, they're not that interested in web apps, so why would they spend time? They've got a browser which serves web pages very well, and okay, it might not be advancing in enough time for a web apps, but that's not in their interest.
But think back to the and it was the kind of iOS and OS, you know, OS 10 presentations where they would talk about their JavaScript engines and how it was now X times better. That's all gone.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore.
Gone.
Barclays, it doesn't want you to use Apple Pay. It wants you to use its own devices.
Aha.
They've come up with a wristband, a key fob, and a sticker, which they basically will work with the same technology that you have on your contactless payment cards. So anywhere that contactless payment cards work, your Barclays device will work as well. And they're conspicuous in their absence from the announcement. You know, the Apple Pay kind of our supported partners are. So they're not going down that route. And that's quite a big chunk of the market, I'd imagine. I don't know the figures, but it feels like they're quite prevalent.
Yep. And there are still quite a lot of, certainly when this came out as an article, and it was just a few days ago, and when the iOS and Apple Pay announcement for UK was made, the amount of people that tweeted and said, Barclays, if you don't support, and you could see it on Barclays' own support line, you know, on Twitter feed, you know, if you don't support this, we'll leave. We want the convenience of using Apple Pay. And it's daft because people...
But they won't. Barclays,
exactly.
No, they won't. Barclays give me a better, almost as good a blooming interest rate as a loan. I think that's not true anymore because actually the interest rates have been so low for now. But anyway, yeah, so compared to like your 15 APR or whatever it is normally for all other credit cards, I'm not moving away from my 6% or whatever it is.
No, and the thing I think is that might for, and you're, it's not something that applies to you right now. I did see some people saying, well, you know, I want to use Apple Pay for contactless. And it's like, but you've got a card already.
Yeah.
And see, if you have to take your phone out to pay with Apple Pay, you're not benefiting anything.
Until we don't have cards in our wallet anymore and everyone jumps onto a provider, which isn't going to happen because you're not going to get everyone having an Apple phone just to go and pay and get rid of the cards.
But what I was going to make was, it's not just that, see, they're taking the phone out to pay. To me, that's the same as taking a card out of a wallet. I still have to go and reach somewhere. The difference is I can actually just do it with a watch. And I think that is slightly different. You know, it's just a really quick payment. I don't need to fumble around. That is slightly different. I could see somebody making an argument that, yes, that is more, I don't know, more slick, more seamless than having to go in and fumble. See if somebody's now sitting here and going, I need to leave Barclays because they won't support it, because I want to pull out my phone and pay with Apple Pay. You're a cock. You just pull out your wallet and pay with your contactless card. Well, yeah. It's exactly the same.
Barclays have got a wrist wearable, so there. Because everyone's going to want to wear one of them, aren't they?
It's exactly. It's interesting also that it seems to be the word something and pay has now become synonymous. So there's Samsung Pay, and there's Google Pay, and there's Apple Pay, and there's now BPay. So
maybe Sky will sue them soon because Pay is too close to Sky. Three letters, you know. That's, they seem to sue for everything else, so why not that? Anyway, these devices cost. I'm not even going to tell you how much they cost because you're not going to buy one. It's fine.
No, I'm going to do it. So from, they're available from yesterday, and it's £15 for a sticker, £20 for a key attachment, and £25 for a wearable.
Well, you could just take out your bloody card and put it against the sensor.
Exactly. I've got a battery card, and see, a couple of years ago, they kind of did something when contactless first came out. They were like, you know, but what are you saying, your sticker? And I was like, I'm not going to put a sticker anywhere near any of my devices with batteries on it. And they're like, we really want to send you. And then they told me there was a charge, and I was like, I'm not interested. And then about 2 months later, they sent me it anyway.
Right, okay.
So. And I was like, I'm just, whatever. You know what I mean? I'm not going to use this.
Thing is, don't chuck it in the bin, though. What do you do with that? You have to chop it into pieces, surely.
I stabbed it with all my... all.
Excellent. Prime Now is coming outside the US. This opens up 1 hour deliveries for Amazon inside Zone 1 of London. Apparently they are looking to expand that outside Zone 1 soon and to other locations, but if you are there, you can have same day deliveries, you can have 2 hour deliveries for free, and you can have 1 hour deliveries for $6.99. I don't know what you could possibly need so desperately that you want to spend $6.99 for an hour delivery.
Yeah, but even if it's like, if you want to wait 2 hours, I still think that's amazing. 2 hours to get a free delivery is fantastic.
Exactly. I just don't know where that extra $6.99 comes from. What is it?
Depends how desperate you are.
I really need this latest product. I need it now.
Oh, there's probably always a scenario you can put yourself in. It's like, I really need this. So I'll give you one. We're doing a demo at work last year, right?
Yeah.
We're doing a demo and... it's fairly high profile, and it was in our brand new swanky visualization suite. Checked everything. Nobody checked the batteries in the 3D glasses. And unfortunately, over the weeks, they'd been failing. And instead of replacing the batteries, somebody just said, we'll just get it at some point. So we very quickly needed 20 clock watch batteries.
Yeah, so then, but then it's still likely to be quicker to go downtown, wouldn't it?
No, I would have happily paid. No, not when you have to get to the car, drive down to Matlin or whatever, pay their inflated rates when I could order it at like a tenth of the price on Amazon and somebody could have just brought it to me for £7.
And then with a fancy $6.99. Okay, so you found a reason, but there you go. So anyway, it's this relentless onslaught. And as I said, Amazon are going into takeaway deals and things like that, and same day and 1 hour deliveries. Can you imagine all this? They literally are trying to be everything, aren't they? It's bonkers.
I just think this is the way we're going to end up going. You know, there's a definite I don't know. I always thought Prime I would never sign up to. I always thought I would never go Prime, and I'm loving it. See, just that whole I ordered a little temperature sensor nonsense thing. And now and I was sitting on Sunday night, I was like, God, I want to hook that up to something. So I've got a Raspberry Pi the next day. Little Raspberry Pi with all its bits and pieces, and see just that whole order.
It does what it's designed to do, though, isn't it? Which is make you even more of a consumer, which I guess morally it's a bit... Do you just give into it? I guess you just give into it, don't you? Because I quite like the idea of Prime, but it's still... Because I don't want any of the other services associated with it, it's still a fair whack. You have to buy a fair few things to get that, to make that justifiable.
Definitely.
Okay, Amazon here we go. Set to pay self-published authors as little as 0.006p per page read. So if you self-publish on, is that Kindle or is it actually based? I guess it's going to be around Kindle, right?
Yeah.
Wow, that's not a lot of money. Someone's going to have to read something an awful lot.
Yeah, this is, and again, it's probably a bit like how you were saying, you know, is this the relentless pursuit that Amazon are on about, you know, but we'll do this with, you know, with purchasing and we'll do this with Prime, etc. And this is another one they're going down in that. So previously, if you self-published, you get £1.30. So $1.30 per download. So see, if you self-published and I downloaded your book I got $1.30. Fantastic.
So that you don't get to define your price then?
Well, I think that was, so let me just make sure on that. I think there was some people that you could do it, but this was all tied in with the Kindle owner's lending library. Yeah. So this is a bit like the, you know, you, once it's on there, if I download it, I've got, you know, access to 200,000 or 300,000 books. Yeah. But they've said, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to move to, if somebody downloads it, they don't pay anything. And it's only the pages they read that they will pay. And the way they've worked out this price, because what they're, what Amazon are saying is, we're not making any more money out of this. So if they, they've got some stats behind it all. And I think previously they said they were giving out, was it I don't know, so many. So it was $11 million a month for June, July and August. And they're still going to pay that out. But instead of doing this fixed fee, they're going to do it on per pages.
So in other words, if you write 1,000 pages of drivel, you're going to get more money than someone who writes 10 pages of awesome copy. Poets are screwed.
Poets are screwed. But if you read, if you write 1,000 pages of drivel, it's only if you read it.
Yeah, yeah. But so,
you could get into like 10 pages.
Just employ a load of friends to just click through the pages. Is that illegal? That's probably illegal.
Quite rightly, there's winners and losers in all this, because obviously Amazon are saying we're not getting out of this. We just think this is a fairer model. And so there is a literary editor who said, some of the self-publishing authors have said, we're not doing this anymore.
No.
We're going to see our royalties drop 60 to 80%.
Yeah, because if, like I say, if you've got a, you know, a short story that you're trying to sell, that's never going to beat someone who's got a massive novel.
Yeah. So they've said a lot of self-published romance authors are disabled, stay-at-home moms, or even a few returned veterans who work in the field because a regular job isn't just something they can handle. You know, so they've got some time to kill. This has been a good way of getting income, but the money against time is no longer there. But equally, if there will be winners, meaning those who write longer books that are read in full, they are going to benefit greatly, because instead of getting, you know, $1.30, they maybe get, I don't know, $10 if they've written a 60,000 page book.
Not all words are created even equal, right? So it's just silly trying to say that every single word is worth exactly the same, isn't it? You know, every single page is worth the same. It's just not right.
It's just this march, and it's a bit like music and that whole argument about should it be free music, and it's now getting to the same with books. It's just now, you know, like that's such a tiny amount for a page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as you say, if you're a
more
poet,
effort's gone in than that.
Yeah, if you're a poet and you've spent, I don't know how long, maybe some people, maybe some of the you know, great poets can rattle that stuff out. But
that's the thing, they probably don't, do they?
Yeah, you know, take weeks to do it and they're getting that. Bah.
Good news, though. Data roaming charges are due to end in the EU. Woohoo! laws coming in, or, you know, whatever the EU calls these things, saying that they can only charge a tiny surplus on top of, you know, existing charges. There will be exceptions to that rule, but generally speaking, it will mean that whatever you pay for internet on your local networks will actually be the same when you're roaming around Europe.
And the surcharge is only for 2016. From 2017, it's gone.
So they're allowed a surcharge for a short while.
Yep. So April 2016, they're going to do this really small surcharge. By June 2017, none.
So basically, whatever you charge, you're charged by your operator for internet and data and phone calls and whatever text messages, you will be able to go to Europe and do the same. Thumbs up, European Union.
Pretty much. There is a little bit.
Taking them a long time.
It has taken a long time. I think they promised this years ago. And then it all got watered down, and then it's kind of ramped up again. However, there is a little bit of net neutrality issues around it, because there's exceptions to the rules, and ISPs will be able to favour services that require high quality internet connections, such as internet TVs, as long as they do not impinge on the overall quality of internet traffic.
And I can't remember what our angle was that we went down. As long as they don't prioritize one service's internet TV over another service's internet TV, I'm still relatively comfortable that they shape it slightly to make sure that on-demand services are still run smoothly, whereas web page delivery, which doesn't necessarily have to, you know, be as smooth, can take a tiny hit without actually you even noticing. So if you're a provider and you're streaming YouTube and then you actually stream Netflix better or more, or you choose Amazon Movies, and you have a that's not right, because they're still offering the same kind of video straight movie access. Whereas if it's movies versus web pages, I can see that there should be a difference and maybe shape it to make it more reasonable. So that's where I sit on it. But there you go. Good news. Thank you, Europe. Cisco, going to buy OpenDNS. You've been an OpenDNS user for years.
Yeah, I quite liked OpenDNS. No, it's always been better for me. And happy with it.
I can't remember this pre-podcast, wasn't it, that you suggested moving over to it if you were having slow internet connection, because it did just speed up that initial DNS lookup, which many ISPs didn't really pay any attention to. They just had DNS providers that was just run of the mill, and OpenDNS did seem to do a rocket ship fast lookup.
Yep, because I can't remember who I was with at the time. You know, I don't know if it was like a PlusNet or, you know, wherever mm-hmm. I've been with, but I think even Virgin for a time had a pretty, I think theirs is a lot better now. I think a lot of the ISPs have.
Most
improved.
ISPs have realized how important it is now.
Yeah. But OpenDNS was always one of those that I think even before Google really promoted what they were doing, because yep. I think, is it 888 is Google's, I think you can move to. And the OpenDNS has always been really good for me, and then also they do offer a kind of, there's always a lot of kind of, there's a level of protection as well, because they do filter out a lot of,
they were very early in that game of stopping you go to phishing sites and stopping you go to this, absolutely. That and the other, and checking whether you did really want to go to this site that looks like your bank but isn't. Cisco bought them, $635 million. Not a lot of detail around that at the moment, but everyone sounds very excited.
Oh, the bit that surprised me, they've got 10,000 paying customers, this is OpenDNS, and 50 million users. It's a really small amount of paying users.
Yeah, I guess everyone pretended they were commercial, non-profit.
Yeah.
I promise, yeah, no, nothing going on here. Zane Lowe has been talking out about Beats One. Have you listened to the Beats One yet? Been on?
Yep.
So yeah. I accidentally updated my system. I didn't even mean to do it today. It just came up with a, do you want to update now? And I meant to click remind me tomorrow, and I accidentally clicked update now, and it seemed to just shut everything down almost immediately. So I eventually got, I put iTunes on, and I had a very quick listen, and I don't know what the fuss is about.
Well, I mean, so I updated on Tuesday, and I saw some, you know, people absolutely going jizz-tastic over it, and it was like calm down, because it's just one of these things. I think some people will not, you know, it's like if Apple does something well, and there's no denying it is a good service, but it is like, oh no, this is by far the best. And it's like, it's not.
But I tuned in and it wasn't really my taste in music, as in that particular time, you know, they're talking about we won't have these genres and stuff, but they're definitely playing genre music, and that, you know, they got all their station, their equivalent stations, which I guess are playlists almost, are they?
Yeah, and I put in a couple articles around about Apple Music, so this one was on Beats One, and although they're saying they're kind of genreless and you'll play it from across the world, I mean, what the Guardian are basically pointing out is they're trying to go for this universal 28-year-old, you know, and there's a kind of, that's who they're targeting, and, you know.
And they have to, because
you've got to target somebody.
You're not going to target a station. You're not going to make a station that my mum's going to listen to and I'm going to listen to, are you? That's,
no.
It's just not, and you know, and that was Teeny Bopper is going to listen to.
That was the point that many people made. They said they're going to be journalists, and it's like, well, you've not played one bit of classical music yet. You know, so for a lot of people who love that genre, there's nothing there for them.
No, and they're not going to, because that would.
Beats One isn't going to go for that. You know that straight away. But I certainly found, you know, the first night's music, you know, a lot of it was, I didn't enjoy all of it, no. But there was definitely some new artists on there, and I was like, never heard of him, like that. That was really good.
But what does it give you? You know, it doesn't give you anything more than Zane Lowe's Radio 1 show used to do, right?
No,
he played quite a wide variety.
Thing. So I'll tell you one thing I did like. So I was listening to it, and I laughed at people on Twitter, who were, because it was very strange, because he did his whole, I'm saying, no, this is worldwide, this is Apple, all that nonsense. Mm-hmm. But halfway through the song, he said, you're listening to Apple One, or sorry, you're listening to Beats One. And people were going, don't do your idents through the middle of the track.
He always has.
And he kept on doing it for the first three or four tracks, and people were going ape. It was all like, this Brit, you know, DJ doesn't know what he's doing and all that kind of stuff. And it was like, no, you just don't get Zane Lowe. There's a,
Now, when he's doing bad things, he's not a Brit anyway, he's an Aussie. So, or is he New Zealand? I can't remember one of the two.
New Zealand, okay. But Americans can't tell. They just see it as yet again as some crazy Brit at Apple.
Give him a chance. He does. I think he did a good job. But
I loved his Radio 1 show, and I really liked. As I said, I've listened to a couple of his shows now. I think they're really good. What I have liked, the app itself, there's loads in it, but it's quite confusing. There's so much kind of hidden. So when you fire up Apple Music, and which I've done just now, and it's playing a track, so I'm like, where am I? But if I go to radio, and when you see radio, you see like the button to play Listen Now, but if you don't click that and just click Beat 1, and then you can go in and you can pick one of the DJs, and then you can see the track listings for the shows.
Right, okay.
So, and that's a really nice way of discovering, you know, so see if you, because they're not obviously, and this is the thing, they keep on saying we're live for 24 hours, but they're not. There's like, you know, I think his first show was 2 hours long.
Yes.
And then it'll replay at other times during the day. And I don't mind that. You know, there's a, but what I really liked was being able to go in and say, so there's Zane Lowe, pick him, and I can see his playlists. So there's two shows, and then you don't hear him DJing, you just get the tracks that he played and you can just play through them.
Yeah.
And I thought that was nice. But we've
had that on the BBC site for ages. This is just, you know, it's trying to just pick down what's additional here.
I think they've made that really easy to get to that information.
Yeah. And I guess on BBC, even when you've got a playlist, you doesn't necessarily mean you can go play it immediately by just clicking on it.
You know, so that made it, so that was the difference. But apart from that, I didn't see anything particularly, you know, genre defining and, you know, massively different than Spotify.
Just another radio station is going to advertise the music industry's latest songs, really. So, they might chop out some of the dross.
And if I go to the app itself, so the For You section, I think there's been some nice playlists in there already, probably because I've got everything in that was up in iTunes Match. So there was already surfacing some stuff that I liked anyway, and it was suggesting things, and certainly I've listened to a couple of them now. You know, Hudson Mohawk, it was suggesting I should listen to. And I never told it to do that. And I was actually interested in his new album coming out. So I was like, oh, it seems to be targeting me. And it knows that. I don't think it knew I was going to like that. But it was something I was kind of interested in anyway. And there's been other things in there that has been, I think the playlists have been good so far. But I don't know how refreshed they'll keep, if you know what I mean. So see, one of the things I found with Google, see that first week, I thought these playlists are great. But after 3 weeks, it doesn't really change.
Well, it's just doing the same thing. That's because you don't change your music taste. These algorithms don't change, right?
Well, but even when I went in and said, give me a... Because with Google, you could go in and say, give me a, you know, a running playlist that's rock-based.
Yeah.
And it was always based the same on ones. Yeah. And I was like, I want you to give me new music. And I think there does seem to be an emphasis. And I don't know if that's... You know, I'm not saying it's Zane Lowe. But I do think they are emphasising that kind of discovery. So you can go in and see lots of different playlists. Under new, there's lots there as well. And I quite like that. But I'm sure if you're a Spotify user, you'll be like, I had that already. There's nothing new there for me.
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah.
So over it. they did play Pharrell Williams' new record 3 times in the first 2 hours, probably due to contractual obligations.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Which is hardly going with their kind of, we're just going to play good music, as in now we've got to play this music because we're contractually obliged to do it.
The Connect bit of it, I'm just not very sure about at all. So I'm in there just now looking through the artists.
I certainly didn't
Connect.
Play with that.
And I can see Churches are just telling us that they're finishing their second album, which is good news. So they've just posted 3 hours ago.
Churches.
And amazingly, they've got 563 likes and 72 comments. So clearly, people are using it.
They've made it onto mainstream now, haven't they? They've gotten to normal radio and stuff. So.
No, but what I mean, I didn't mean that people knew Churches. I was more meaning that people are using Connect. Because I actually doubted. I thought it was another like Apple Ping. You know, it would just be like,
Apple what?
Yeah. So see as a service, fine. But there's lots of people saying Spotify is going to die, and I don't see it. I don't get that.
Not another subscription. People are going to have to make a decision about what they want, and we'll see. I'm sure there'll be an impact. the Apple Match though is causing problems again. It's rearing its ugly head. So the service that always did cause some problems, really, concept fine, execution not very good, and apparently it's still not quite there. still has a liability to change your music, change your indexing, change the graphics, change.
So this is a bit of a worry for me because iTunes Match never did that for me, and I think in the past it never destroyed libraries, but it was a bit flaky.
It destroyed it for me. It destroyed my music library.
So it was what I found. It's been flaky. So I'll be sitting there saying, you know, it's either not uploading from iTunes, you know, if I add a new album, or if I'm sitting there trying to play it, it'll just stop. And it's like, well, I know it's not the 4G network, and I know it can only be, you know, at the Apple end, because everything else is working fine. But some of the issues this week, and Apple weren't very clear when Apple Music launched. It's like, is this separate to iTunes Match? Yeah, they're separate services. But then they said, if you're a Apple Music subscriber, you're going to get the same benefits of iTunes Match, and you'll be able to store up to 100,000 of your tracks. And it never made it very clear. And what we've had this week is people saying it's like, you know, they've went into their music library and they've had their music overwritten. They've had files moved to different albums. They've had covers updated. And it's like, that's horrendous.
I got that's fully burnt horrendous. On it. I did this test thing, and then my whole library, you know, got moved to the cloud, and then I couldn't gain access to it because it all failed around that time that they were having massive problems. And it's like, okay, well, so all my local files have gone, and I can't get them now down from the cloud anyway. So it just felt messy, felt horrible, and once burnt for forever shy kind of thing. It's just, I don't want to go through the pain of having to redigitize all music again on CDs that have long since seen their better days. But yeah.
And the bit that's under iTunes Match, when you downloaded music from the service, so just say you wiped your local library and you downloaded it again, you got, there was no DRM on the tracks. You could use them anywhere. With moving it to Apple Music, there's now DRM on all the tracks.
So basically that limits your usage to, I guess, certain players and stuff, right?
And a lot of people believe this is probably some of the stuff that Apple maybe in the past had negotiated. They've had to renegotiate to try and get the streaming service, and it's been locked down a bit more.
Yeah, okay. If you are so embedded in a service that you're only ever going to use your Apple devices to listen to that music, then it makes no difference.
But if
you want that freedom to move your library elsewhere, then that's where it comes from.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So a lot of people are, you know, I'm sitting just now, and would I move anything away from Apple right now? Probably not. But then never say never, because for years I was a Windows user, and I looked on enviously and thought, but I'm still not going to move. And you just, as I said, never say never.
Just not likely.
No, but I wouldn't want to have something as fundamental as my music library tied to I can't move from this platform.
No, and especially now that Google Play Music is gunning for you, as far as here, have it all and few adverts and you can have it for free as well.
So as I said, Apple Music I thought was a decent launch, but see the whole, I see every so often when somebody, there's one guy, but I need to unfollow him. He's almost like, it's fine. But he starts retweeting people that are leaving, you know, Spotify and joining Apple. Like, it's almost like searching through Twitter to find it. And it's like,
well, there are definitely going to be people that do that. But I don't see what they're going for. I don't yet see where the full advantages are. I know you've highlighted a few sort of nice little tweaks, but it's hardly redefining a whole industry. But that's how Apple spin it. That's how people consume it. So that's up to people.
I guess the other thing you could turn around and say is it's got a slightly more complete library than Spotify, but hardly thousands and thousands of, you know, so...
Well, it's got Taylor Swift.
So Taylor Swift...
That's surely enough to run across to...
Actually, you see that Tom York was always against streaming, so he refused to put... So Radiohead were kind of... long time before they put their albums on, but his solo albums never appeared in any streaming service, but he's on Apple Music.
Yeah, okay. And I have no doubt there'll be a better deal compared to Spotify for artists.
I think they're slightly better, but I think the big thing seems to be that people are saying there's no free tier. All we want to do is make sure that people pay for music and there's no free tier. So this seems to be the big thing that they're saying, and Apple Music's not got a free tier. So there's a lot of the, I don't know, a lot of the fundamental issues are gone.
Yeah, there's always a free tier. It used to be called Napster. That is the end of our podcast. We managed to stretch what was supposed to be a short podcast up to 45 minutes. Well done, us. But if you want to find out more about who we are, what we do, info@digitaloutbox.com is our email address. We're on Twitter as Digital Outbox. I'm on Twitter as Cheesy UK, and I blog all my racing antics on academyracer.co.uk. Where can we find you, Ian?
Blog Ian.net and Twitter as Shweepa.
It's been fabulous talking. We must do this again. Oh, we will next week. So we will speak to you then. Goodbye.
Ta-da.